Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Jules Gill, why am I starting to get more ill and you're freezing cold? Is it because Stray just won the best indie game at the Game Awards?
Oh, why, mate?
Is it because Multiversus just beat Sifu?
Okay, so this is the thing. People don't know this at home, but my boiler is broken, right? So I'm literally sitting here freezing my nards off. I've got a Garfield hot water bottle on my lap keeping me just barely alive. And now, all of a sudden, I am too hot. You've made me run hot by reminding me that Stray, a game that won best indie game, and when you look at the description, right? You look at the description of what it takes to win that category. Technical advancement, creativity. I don't think that Has a Cat is not as good as Sifu. Sifu is, I'm just going to say it, Sifu is the best martial arts game that I've ever played. It is hands down the best martial arts. And it was robbed by a stupid cat game. Just it's because the internet likes cats.
That's the thing. It's robbed in the indie categories of indie and best debut indie. And it's also robbed in the fighting game category, which it didn't even belong in. But if it's going to be in there, it's clearly the best fighting game, if that's what we're talking about.
Absolutely burned my cabbages, mate. I cannot believe that it lost to Multiverse. Like
it's a fine game, but like, oh my god, it's not Sifu. Like, what are you talking about?
I don't understand it. I just don't get it. Like, don't get me wrong, it's like you say, it's a really well-made game. It's just not the best well-made fighting game.
There's a lot of stuff coming out of the game. And this isn't the Entitled Banter Rage Cast. This is the Entitled Banter Podcast. The UBP, where we take all your latest talking points and questions and everything across Twitter and Instagram. We'll get through as many as we can, but I just wanted to open on the Game Awards.
Sure thing, of course.
Because they mostly got everything right. Elden Ring taking away Game of the Year, which is a really cool pick. Giving the likes of Best Performance to Chris Judge. Probably would have given that to like Man Engage for Immortality or something, but still, it's cool.
The thing is, I would have obviously given it to Ashley Birch just because of the fact that I am in love with her.
Your bae.
Kerry. The thing is that I genuinely believe that going forward, we should put a cap on how many awards a game can win. I genuinely think that it's like, when you look over the list of winners, it was just God of War, Ragnarok, Elden Ring, Ragnarok, Elden Ring. And it's like, I get it that those games are the talking points of the year, but maybe we should, or at least the people in charge of the nominations and who actually wins, they should have said, right, okay, they can have a cap of three apiece. I can't have any more.
That would be
interesting. Every other person's got to get a chance at winning, because there are so many games that were bypassed, and I'm not saying that they were potentially better, but I do feel like they just are never going to get a chance to shine again. That was their one shot, and they've just been dominated by having these other landmark games arrive in the same year. And it doesn't feel like they're going to fall away into the sands of time, and we're going to be making lists about them in about 5 years' time of the underappreciated, the forgotten.
When they should have gotten
the success now. What we're doing is we're actually killing future IPs like this.
The thing is that you can tell, you can feel that we're already looking at when Elden Ring landed, and obviously even before God of War came out, you knew it was going to dominate everything. And then that is the way that it's rolled out. And it's not that it doesn't deserve best narrative, best direction, best soundtrack, whatever.
It's hard to disagree with the fact that it won, but it's just it should have given the spotlight to somebody else, maybe, because now we're going to look at the futures of those sequels. The franchises. They might not get sequels because of this, because people just go, well, all we're talking about is God of War and Ragnarok.
Maybe.
So therefore that game wasn't as good by association.
I think it's interesting in terms of, because that's the thing. I find when I was looking at the awards, because it was on for us in the UK, it was like 1 a.m. mm-hmm. until 3 a.m. in the morning. So I was in bed.
But I was about to say, you didn't stay up.
I was going to stay up for it, but I was out last night. And then I was like, I need sleep more than I need to stay up until.
I thought to myself that you probably were asleep, but then all of a sudden, like the Death Stranding 2 trailer dropped, and you probably sat up in your bed, sweaty, just going like, Hideo, no.
Sam Porter Bridges. I need to know. But I feel like overall, it's like I said, you can't really deny anyone who's won apart from Stray personally for me, or the multiverses thing. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like you said, I would like a better variety of titles to be up there. Like, it's not the thing is, like I said, I can't deny that God of War has an incredible score. Yep. But if something like Metal Hellsinger had taken it, that would have been phenomenal.
Yep.
Something like that. I think it's an interesting conversation. That idea of limiting how many they can win is also an interesting thing. It's like each critic has like 3 tokens to put down, kind of thing. And it's like, okay, you've put down your tokens, so that's kind of it. And would that have the reverse effect of feeling like something was robbed because it needed to win all 4 categories?
But I
think, I don't know, like predetermined winners just feels a bit off. Like, we knew God of War and Elden Ring was going to sweep, but maybe not this much.
Yeah.
But still. But yeah, we'll get through as many questions as we can. One question from Willie Araya, who says, our thoughts on Xbox not raising their prices for their games this generation, only to not release any aside from Halo in the first 2 years, and just when they're about to, they finally raise their prices anyway.
Yeah.
I view this whole £70 thing on Xbox's side as just pushing you towards Game Pass. Yeah. I feel like that's the... because you get around it by just, subscribing to the monthly fee instead.
It's like they're pricing themselves out of a market that they're not actually interested in anymore. They just go like, cool, we have a better product available at a cheaper price. So by comparison, it looks even better value now. It's a super smart, shrewd and greasy practice. But
that's actually hilarious that they sort of
commend them for it, you know?
Yeah. Like, they almost looked directly into how much the general reaction was to when Sony did it and the reaction to when Xbox did it. And then they themselves are going like, don't worry, I know we're the villain right now, but we're also the hero because you can go over here and get this instead. That's actually like kind of hilarious that they're sort of just, like I said, I always thought it was towards Game Pass, but like you said, it's like they're pricing themselves out of the competition by embracing that same economic model.
It reminds me, did you ever watch 30 Rock?
No, I know what it is.
So there's a scene in it where Tina Fey's character is talking to, I can't remember the name of, it's her boss's name. I can't remember it off the top of my head. Yes. And it's about Alec Baldwin. And what he says is, have you ever wondered why those discount Dorito chips that you eat come with a sachet of anti-diarrhea medication? And she's like, well, it's because the Doritos give you diarrhea. And she's like, think about it. And she's like, oh, they make you give you on diarrhea on purpose so that you'll buy more of the medicine. And he just goes, he puts his hands together and goes, synergy. And
it's just mesh the fingers.
It's exactly like that with the Game Pass. It's just like, you've got the diarrhea that you've just said by raising the prices of your games, and then you've got the anti-diarrhea medication, which is the Game Pass.
The thing is, on the Xbox side as well, like, I mean, it's not to like poop all over Xbox stuff, but they don't have £70, like, you know, they don't have top tier titles. If the comparison point is the highest brow third person stuff, or the highest made third person stuff, and the Sony model that's been established, like the Ghost of Tsushima's or the Last of Us 2's or whatever it is, the top tier stuff, Xbox hasn't had a single one of them in, I don't even know how long, over 10 years, like, I guess Gears, but like still, it's very few and far between.
And when they chose to basically say that Halo Infinite was going to be a day one Game Pass thing, they'd shot the potential of value in its foot with that, because it's like, why would you ever pay £70 when it's on Game Pass and not finished?
Imagine paying £70. That's the thing. Imagine paying £70 for Halo Infinite. I mean, it's like, you know, that game doesn't play extremely well, but that's
just crazy.
The rest of it's not there, isn't it? Yeah, it's like I said, though, I think their overall thing is just pushing you to Game Pass, and I love them embracing, like, almost using the hate towards that price model to also be like, but we also have this, and then hopefully that works out for them. But yes, next question, Mr. Jules.
Okay, so we'll go over to Instagram now, and we're going to go to Suggy Roo, who says, hello, legends, anime series that need a fighting game like Dragon Ball FighterZ or FighterZ.
Probably One Punch Man. I know there's a One Punch Man game.
It is
anyway,
a One Punch Man game.
But it's not rendered like as well as FighterZ. It's not like taking advantage of how over the top a lot of those fights can be. It's quite a basic fighting game.
Yeah, the only element of that game that I did like is the fact that when you choose to have Saitama in your party, there's a countdown timer in the top left-hand corner, and you have to wait until that timer comes down before he bothers to show up to the fight, and he's undefeatable when he's there, which is just amazing. Because
do you know what I've just realized, sorry, is that One Punch Man slash Saitama, Orange Cassidy from AEW just is One Punch Man.
Oh, 100%.
He even does the giant, the orange punch.
Oh, like, yeah, 100%.
For the 9 wrestling fans in the audience, I've just realized that. Yeah.
He's great, isn't he? If you like that, I think I told you last week that you should check out Mob Psycho 100, because it's basically the same, but with Psycho, what's it called again? Psychokinetic powers, and like he's an Esper in this one there. Okay. Psychic powers, that's what I was thinking.
I just think for One Punch Man, like when he fights, I don't know what you call the demon he fights at the very end of season one, but it's an actual fight. It goes back and forward loads because that dude can keep up with him, and you actually get to have that fight. Now, I get the argument that that's more of a standard anime fight, and at the end, he reveals that he was just holding back and he doesn't really,
it's
sad.
You can see how depressed the guy is. He's like, wait a minute, what, you're just toying with me? He's like, listen, man, like I gave you one punch and it killed your armor. You survived more than every other enemy in the entire series.
That also has,
but you're
like
about to die now.
Exactly. That also has my favorite shot in anime, recent anime history, where Punch Man punches so hard that he parts the clouds across the world.
It's so cool.
And it's like a massive zoom out shot. Yeah. I love that so much. But my point is that you could maybe do a One Punch Man fighting game that embraces that style, but then I guess you would need all the fights to be that over the top. Yeah. But I feel like there's something cool to be done
there. The thing is that the way they make One Punch Man as a series interesting for the viewer is that they spend so much time on the sub-characters as well to make them feel more fleshed out. You see the struggles of their fights versus the easiness of Saitama's fights. So they could easily make that into a single-player story where you bounce between the sub-characters, and then you have moments where you just are One Punch Man and it is literally just one punch and you win. Because those moments would then feel earned as the kind of power fantasy that comes with being it. Or you could alternatively take it and do the rise of Saitama, and you do basically his early
days. Training regimen.
Yeah, the training regimen. You just do like a boring mini game after mini game, but then you have like No More Heroes style fights where they're just over before they start.
I guess like the final boss would be that big lobster man as well. Like the guy that he fights at the beginning of season
crab
one.
Crab Linguini, Crab Goo. His name is. But he's got like little eyes painted on his nipples.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so funny, man. Or nipples painted on his carapace. That's what he has. Yeah.
Yeah, if no one's watched One Punch Man, it's so easy to dive into, even on the English dub, which it's like the only anime that I would watch on the English dub.
It's so funny.
But yeah, what anime would you have as a video game?
Well, I was thinking about this actually. There are loads of anime games out there already, but I personally would go to the realms of One Piece because I know that they've already got loads of, like, they had a Dynasty Warriors style game that was out there. They've got a new one coming up on the horizon that's meant to be like a third person action game, but a straight up fighting game with all of the main cast and characters, of which there are now like hundreds of brilliant characters, could make for something that rivals Fighters as kind of the next spectacle fighter, especially if it was given the same treatment as the Guilty Gear team gave to Dragon Ball Z game. I mean, it's just think about it, like having Luffy like square off against like some of his greatest villains, but in a 2D or 2.5D plane would be brilliant. I'd love that.
Well, I feel like because I've not played DNF Duel yet, and that was just that was nominated at the Game Awards as well, but I love the art style of that, and I think that is still the Arc System Works, the guys that did Fighter Z and
I think that they're becoming the go-to for fighting games. I think that they phenomenal way of crafting that sort of 2D to 3D aspect. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, and it's like, that's the thing. I really love, because I was good when you initially asked the question, I was thinking of Demon Slayer, but honestly, the Demon Slayer game is phenomenal. Like,
I've
the
never
most
played
recent
it, actually.
Really, really solid. Like, really solid. Like, obviously, the campaign just recreates the anime, but the actual fighting mechanics are just tight enough. Like, there's not that much going on in terms of depth, but it's enough. Like, it's enough to have fun with it. And the actual art style is incredible. And it has that Arc System Works style thing of, like, if you freeze frame any part of it, it looks like the anime, but then it is actually rendered in 3D.
That's cool.
All the special moves are just, like, taking advantage of the 3D renders. I had a lot of fun with the Demon Slayer game. I think that thing is like really overlooked, like especially because Fighter Z takes the crown, which it should. But if you like Demon Slayer, the game is actually stellar. It's just quite highly priced because it's a Demon Slayer game, and that's like the big popular thing.
After we spoke last time, did you get a chance to watch Chainsaw Man?
Not yet, no, I need to. I've only like just recovered this last couple of days.
I forget you. You were on the brink of death, and then Sonic Frontiers nearly finished you off.
Oh my God, that's the thing. That's how sick I was doing the platinum in Sonic Frontiers. But no, I need to get around to that stuff. But I think, yeah, anime games, I feel like having a bit of a moment. Like even that rendering style in something like, oh my God, is it Scarlet Nexus, the game from a couple of years ago?
Oh yeah, yeah. That kind of came and went with a blip, but it was really fun. I played the demo for that, and it was really, really good. There's a certain style like that when like these anime-esque games games come out and you just go, oh, that's brilliant. And then they never really take off, or they find like a niche audience. Like, do you remember Gravity Rush? I always felt like that
was... Oh, hell yeah, I love Gravity Rush.
I felt like that was an anime. Like, I always just felt like that had the whole anime aesthetic around it. And it just, unfortunately, never really connected. We got that amazing sequel, Gravity Rush 2, and then we just didn't get anything else.
I always wonder, I wonder if they would do more, because like when they do the cutscenes are kind of like the little comic strips and stuff, and it's like you get like did like animated cutscene stuff, animated stills. Like, yeah, that feels like it would totally work for an anime. Like a cat's power set is great, like inverting gravity and going off in different directions.
Imagine that, you just like do a fighting game, but you're manipulating the gravity of the arena. That's how you fight. So you're like combating with your opponent in pockets of gravity to like increase your attack and stuff like that. That would be amazing fun.
If you, you invert gravity and then you do this like massive long wind-up kick because you're kicking from one side of the screen to the next, but everyone is going towards the right anyway. That'd be really sick. That's kind of what Lawbreakers tried to do, that like that failed Cliffy B game.
That was an odd
had like pockets of gravity,
it?
But it didn't really work. But anyway, next question from Pinky, and I want to give a happy birthday to Pinky. He says that he's 38. Happy birthday, and thank you very much for listening to us for so long. He says, which gaming trend, terminology, talking point, etc., makes you feel old as F? For me, it has to be consoles from my late teens or early childhood, early adulthood, being referred to as retro. I had a job when I bought my GameCube for crying out loud.
God, blimey. Well, what do you say to that, eh? What do you say?
I mean, the thing is, the whole idea of retro games, like Xbox 360 games are starting to be referred to as retro, which I guess is the same time period, like the late 2000s. I definitely feel that. I think in terms of old AF stuff, it's the newest generation accepting how overly monetized everything is.
Yeah.
And just kind of spending 20, 30, 40 pounds, 100 pounds on a skin. Whereas, like, we would never have, and I hate the whole, we would never do that back in our day, but having, like the fact that that capitalistic model is so ensconced in gaming that it's accepted means that they've won, and we've just lost as a people. Yeah. Like,
it's interesting that you bring that up, because I was talking to my neighbor, Tom, the other day about this specific thing, because I asked him what was his first console, and he said it was the GameCube, and I was like, wow, that was your first ever console, the GameCube. You'd stepped in at a level where gaming was already like in the midst of becoming the art that we know it to be today. The storytelling was matching the graphical output. The gameplay was incredible. Like 3D had been fully kind of realized and embraced at that point. And it's just like, what a different
experience. Missed that entire ramp up,
And that, but that means, I wonder, are you actually as impressed with video game advancements? So say that like your first console is now the current generation of consoles, the PS5s, whatever. That means that the next jump up, like how much more can we jump up? Like the PS4 to PS5, admittedly, it's big enough to justify the jump, but it's not that much of a difference that God of War 1 looks so terrible next to God of War Ragnarok.
It's not, and it's not like Final Fantasy 7 to 10 or like Metal Gear Solid 1 to 2. Like that leap from PS1 to PS2 was like magic. Like Metal Gear Solid 2 still holds up now, and that's 20 years old.
But it's interesting because he was talking about, what game series was it? But he said he didn't go back to play the original game because it didn't look as good. And maybe I'm paraphrasing it here, but it's like, I've had more conversations with people saying that they'll go to almost like the PS3 is as far back as some people will go, because before that, the graphics look too janky. You can't make out what's going on. I'm like, dude, you have no idea what it's like.
There's like that weird thing about, you know, can the polygonal era graphics come back and be done well again? And I think it's interesting because like there's a game from this year called Signalis that's like a proper throwback to like old school Resident Evil, like late 90s. And that game's cutscenes are kind of done anime style. They're sort of, they're more 2D, but the character models are way more polygonal. And I love that. I think totally works, and I don't know if that's how much of that is nostalgia and how much it would work for like a new audience. I think it would work. I think it's done well enough, and there's a way to do it, but it feels like the old like SNES or 2D pixel art stuff, that's what came back and was allowed to exist, whereas like things like the polygonals kind of just beginning to find out how to do a modern polygonal game like Signalis or Proteus or like something that is like throwback to the PS1 era, and it has to be deliberately like Lego-y or like bricky in a way because it's trying to emulate like the technical limitations of the time. It's like, how much do you smooth them over before it doesn't look like a PS1 game anymore?
It's crazy, isn't it? Because when you go back to PS1 titles, I remember the jump from the SNES to the PS1 and was just like, wow, some of these games look really bad. Like, everyone's telling me that they look good, but I can. There's less graphical fidelity and I cannot tell what the heck is going on. It's just
it's like Nightmare Creatures was like, because the thing is, I think some
Nightmare Creatures where you like, had to like draw distance like of here to the end of my table, and
yeah, then exactly.
It was just like everything just came out of the fog and had the one sound effect of wow, 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 wow. That was literally the only sound effect.
Charlie Brown's mum coming at you through the fog. But it's like that whole thing of like, that's still in a way though, when we were kids, for me, that worked. It was like effective. And I think that's why something like Silent Hill worked, because it was like the technical limitation. Like I don't know, that whole thing of your mind fills in the blanks for horror, I think can be really effective.
Yeah.
But in that case, it worked, even though when you look at those designs, they were just like ridiculous. Yeah. Like some of the stuff that you're fighting in the original Tomb Raider, at the end, the Atlanteans or whatever look insane. Yeah. Like it's like Pac-Man coming at you. Like it's very little. But yeah, I think stuff like that, I rarely feel like old AF. I think it's just like recognizing how much has changed and in such a short time. Like gaming moves so fast, even in like a decade, like things will fly on. And it's like, yeah, when you go back to the, we lived through the jump of 2D to 3D to HD to 4K. But like, yeah, I feel sorry for, in a way, for people who can't experience that. Because I remember seeing PS2 games for the first time and how unbelievable that was. And every single game that came out was like, oh my God, we're breaking boundaries. And then now they're just, those boundaries are broken and those genres are set, and that's kind of it.
Yeah, I feel like for me, my old AF moment came when I read a study that your hand-eye coordination and dexterity skills overall start decreasing around the age of 26. Yes. So I was like, oh, okay, that sucks. And so I've already had my peak and not even realized it, apparently.
Right.
But then I noticed that in competitive shooters, I've become less and less enthralled by them, because, not because I feel like I was ever good at them, but just because the skill level of average players is just so much higher than me. I am getting worse at multiplayer video games, and now I can start telling that I am. But when it's certain other games that require specific time structures or like rhythm action games, I can still do them really well. I just don't like playing with other people in competitive games anymore, because it's a case of, hey, Jules, do you want to lose over and over again? Oh, yes, please. Thank you. I'll pay £70 for that experience.
That's a thing as well. Like, how much you'll put up with. Like, the industry makes you put up with a lot of BS, like a lot of over-monetized stuff, a lot of gameplay loops that just crush you into the ground over and over again. And I think sometimes, whether it's difficulty-based or whether it's online shooters, where it's like, oh, I'm going up against someone who's just lived on this for the last 72 hours solid, and they're just gaming the entire system. When it was like, oh, people discovered how to fly in Call of in Modern Warfare 2, and I'm just like, at some point, it's not that you get too old for it, but you get too like wise for it, or whatever it is. It's like, I know what this is. I've done this. We did our version of it in Halo, and I'm not putting up with this BS. I'm going to go do something more worthwhile with my life.
There's that moment, isn't there, where you look at your older self, or your younger self in this case, and you go, oh, I was able to spend all night playing that game from like, as soon as I got home from school, I played that and I had no response.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Abilities. The old AF thing really hits home when you have real life responsibilities. Like nowadays, I'm lucky if I can get maybe an hour or two of gaming done a day outside of work. And that's like a maximum, because of the fact that I'm doing other stuff, or I've got other responsibilities, or I just need to get other stuff done. But it's like, I speak to people who are like, oh, you had For example, Marvel Midnight Suns obviously just came out. Yeah. There are people that I know that are already further ahead than me, and I've had the game 2 weeks ago because of a review thing, but I just haven't been able to get around to spending time with it because these people in question just go, day one I bought it, I stayed up until 5 a.m. the next day playing it. I then woke up and I played that again. I was like, damn, I'm old because I can't dedicate that amount of time, and I don't have the stamina to do it either.
I remember coming out of university realizing just how much full-time work got in the way. This is such a 1% problem, obviously. but still, when you compare like how much you could game when you're a student or when you're a kid or a teen or whatever, versus like, oh man, I need to be up at 7 a.m. so I can get into work and do this stuff and then I can play again later on. I do still carve out time because like gaming is like my main thing. It's like gaming and guitar.
I totally get that. Yeah.
But still, yeah, Midnight Suns is something that I was sad that I had to turn that off the other night. I was like having so much fun. Oh my God, it's incredible. Like, dude, like,
I don't know what, is it GameSpot who gave it like a 6 out of 10?
I don't know, maybe.
What they're on about with that.
Right.
Apologies to GameSpot if it's not you, by the way. But at the same time, I read it and I was just like, why are you so anti-fun? The only thing is,
I think a lot of people bounce off the Academy stuff, yeah.
The Academy stuff, it grows on you. It really does.
Because
when it hits you first off, you're like, oh God, this is going to be so cringy. Everyone's just talking like they're straight out of a high school like rom-com sort of thing, but
that's written by 40-year-olds.
But when you start really diving into it, you realize that, you know, like the gift mechanics and the way you're like picking the right hangout thing or the sending them to a haven to like chill out with them, if you've read the comic books or if you know anything about their personality, when you actually nail that perfect thing of like they love the gift, they love this, they love the chat, you're like, yeah, I know this character. I know this character inside out. And that makes me feel good because I feel like we are connecting. We are making a little bond of friendship between it. Mm-hmm. And I tell you what,
the thing is,
if you need to bond with anyone, it's Magic. Magic is hilarious.
Oh, okay.
She is so sassy and sardonic that she just absolutely loves it every single time you choose the dark, like evil choices. So if you go like she goes, I prefer it when people just say nothing and you have the option to just say nothing and ignore her the entire time. And she loves it. She's like, yeah, you get this. You get this.
Yeah, sometimes it's like plus one to her little like friendship meter
it's
thing.
So funny.
I think, I get people bouncing off the Academy stuff. And I like, be the first person to say that I do bounce off a lot of like what feels like algorithmically written for the kids dialogue. Yeah. Like, I thought Saints Row was terrible this year. I totally get that. But I feel like it's written quite honestly in this. And it's like, it's written to be quite charming. And I find it to have a through line of charm. I find it to be quite friendly. Yep. And it is very light. But I like the whole thing of almost doing this like Mass Effect style setup where it's like, you play as the hunter, you're resurrected. It's like, okay, get to know all these people that you didn't know before. And you can go on little sort of mini hangouts, like you said. You can go do pool parties with Blade.
It's mad.
Or whatever.
That's mad.
That stuff, I get why someone would be like, oh my dear God, that's not what I want at all. However, the combat is so good and it's such a different, like, ripping the rule book style approach to it that I think they nail that, like, once you add on the social stuff, it does make me care about teaming up with someone or, you know, spending time with them. And that little loop of, like, do a little bit out in the combat, do some stuff during the day, and then bank it at nighttime, and then maybe do a little bit of social stuff, and then do another day in the world. Like, that's such an easy way for, like, one more session. And do one more day of combat and whatever. Like, I just kept playing it. It's so good.
See, I think that the overall idea of like getting to know your team and really building that bonds of trust between them is super important, because people who wanted the game to be just action, it's actually telling a more honest superhero story, because it's like, imagine you and I were superheroes. We'd want to clock off at some point. We'd want to relax and chat with our friends.
Like
the idea of Blade in a pool party might seem ridiculous, but we're assuming then that he never wants to relax, that he doesn't want to make friends, that he isn't lonely and like in need of comfort and support or chilling out. If we think that, then we're actually thinking less of him as a character overall.
Also, you don't need to do the pool party stuff. I get that that's been pointed to as one of the most ridiculous.
Optional.
It's optional. But you can just, with him, you can just go spa with him, or you can just go hang out and get a drink or something. You can go for a walk around the academy grounds. Like, it doesn't have to be.
You can tailor what it is. And the thing is, you might choose that pool party and he might hate it because of the fact that it's not in his character. Like it's another thing that people are twisting out of proportion, I feel a little bit.
I'll tell you one thing I want to address for that as well, in terms of like taking things out of proportion, is that assumption that you have to do so much academy stuff at the detriment of the combat. There's so much. I've played it for like 7 hours. Mm-hmm. I've done the majority combat because they give you so many optional side challenges and stuff that you can do. So if you want to do more combat, you can hold square to skip any of the cutscenes and just go, you just put your character back to bed, reset the day and do another combat challenge.
Just go for it.
So like, you can just do it. So I've spent more time in combat than the Academy dialogue stuff, even though I don't mind that stuff. But I think people thinking that it's this big like social game, it's more like The Sims, or it's more like this weird sort of waifu style simulator thing where you're trying to romance everyone. It's not. You can't sadly get with anyone anyway, but still, like if you just want to play the combat, you totally can. And the combat is incredible. If you like anything to do with XCOM or Fire Axis or whatever, This is such a perfect strategy game.
The only thing is, and I did mention this in my review that I am worried about, is the...
Or the potential for monetizing.
Yeah, there's the potential there. I mean, you wouldn't create a card game that has this many sort of random drops, these like the coils that you open up to get new cards, all of these different currencies that exist within the game of like skill essences and stuff like that. Mm. You wouldn't put all of that in if you didn't plan to monetize it at some point. Like, I would be perfectly prepared to stake some money on the fact that at some point it won't be just skins, you'll be able to buy coils, aka loot boxes, to get new things, or currency to buy loot box style coils.
I think if, because right now you can buy the extra coins and just buy the skins with it. I do quite, it's just that this is an old AF thing. I appreciate how buried the microtransaction stuff is, which is such a terrible victory.
Game, which is nice.
No, it only comes up if you go down a certain tier of cosmetics, and then it'll tell you to buy it, and then the only way you can buy it is a specific currency, which it then asks you for real money for, but that's quite deep in the menus. Mm-hmm. You would never even really see it if you didn't find that specific part of the menu. But yeah, I feel like if the game had sold better and it was overall like flying, then maybe they would entertain that stuff, but it hasn't done very well out the gate. Like, Callisto sold really well, even though it's quite broken, and then both Need for Speed and Midnight Suns are falling down the chart. I think Midnight Suns was like 27th in the chart or something.
It's a real shame, because I feel like it's just going to get buried.
Both Need for Speed and Midnight Suns are absolutely stellar, and they're just being so overlooked, and it's just sad. At some point, it's just sad.
The saddest part about it is that if it doesn't sell well like that, it does mean that they might be more pressured to put those microtransactions in to make up for the lost money, and that's worrying as well. But anyway, well, that's another conversation for another day. I'm sure that we can extract this entire conversation out and put a video out on YouTube from it.
Yes. Point is, Midnight Suns is brilliant, and more people should check it out.
Indeed, they should. And let's go over to Instagram now, and we've got a Big Dog Sloan's question, which is what movie franchise do you think would make a good game franchise? Because this is the thing, we've already covered most of our ones. Like, for example, I loved The Thing, and then The Thing got a video game. I'd like to see another one of that. But what game, what movie franchise doesn't have a video game that you would like to see put into a game form?
I wonder. My mind went to, we've done this before, I think, and I mentioned John Wick, but like, obviously has John Wick Hex,
hasn't it?
Has that turn-based thing. I was saying to Josh yesterday that like, I've like checked out of movies. Like, I've just, I don't know if it was the pandemic. Really? I don't know what the hell it is. I just don't find myself caring about movies. I don't want to sit there for 2 hours or 2.5 hours and watch a thing. And I feel like when I was totting up my movies of the year, I had so little that I was absolutely like blown away by. Although, in saying that, it reminded me that my movie of the year is Triple R. It's like a Bollywood action movie.
Okay.
It's called like Rise, Rage, Revolt.
Amazing.
And it's like genuinely the most phenomenal thing you will see this year, which is hilarious because I've just said I haven't seen that much this year, but still. Triple R, or whatever you want to call it, it's just spelled RRR, and it's like this really over the top action movie. It's on Netflix, and it was like sort of covered as like the movie that made Hollywood jealous, because all the set pieces are really over the top and ridiculous, and it's like a mix of like physical stunt work and CG, and it's just astonishing. Like, genuinely go watch that. So I would take a video game of Triple R, because there's fight scenes in that, there are dance sequences in that, there's like
the dance sequence
in that movie. It's so crazy. There's a dance sequence in that which the actors did do in real life, where they had this like dance off for as long as possible until one of them got tired or whatever, and the moves they're doing are all like properly choreographed. I get that it was my first Bollywood film, and my wife was like, you've got to watch this, and so I absolutely adored it. I can't champion that movie enough, but I would take just some really over the top, really fun dance action Bollywood game. I don't care what you base
like,
it on, but
like a quick time event style thing, like the Yakuza minigame, the disco minigame.
Yeah. Like, there's a bit, I can't think what you call the song. I don't know the language for it, but the dance scene, they're singing Nacho, Nacho, Nacho over and over again. I think it's just dance, dance, dance. And it's so fast. You would have to just mash the buttons really, really fast to like dance as fast as possible. Genuinely, the scene is incredible. But yeah, that I would take that. Some sort of Bollywood action dance game would be phenomenal.
That would be amazing. I would like to have a near shot for shot video game adaptation of Dread. Because imagine that you start at level 1, get to the top of the building, kill Mormor, that's it. That's all you got to do.
That'd be sick. Did you know, have we talked about that before? Because I was going to say, have you played Dread versus Death on the PS2?
I have, yes. It came up recently in a list that we were doing because of the ridiculous sponsorships that it had in there. Because it has Red Bull. I'm pretty sure it's Dread versus Death in that one. But it had like Red Bull was everywhere on one of the levels, and it was just like, ooh, that's slimy.
Because it had the gun, when I saw the Sylvester Stallone Dread years ago, and he talks to the gun. I don't know if Dread is a talking gun in general, but he talks to the gun in the movie.
Yeah, it's just like a voice recognition style thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was always like, when they brought in voice controls for like SOCOM, I was like, maybe they're going to do a Dread game where you can say like ballistic missile or whatever.
Yeah.
And
then you know what? Actually, I revised my thing. I don't want a shot for shot adaptation. Mm. I want a VR version of it. Imagine you just go through like a light gun game, but you speak into your controller that your gun to change the ammo. Now that would be banging, man.
Yeah, man. If you had like take cover and then say like a smart missile
Time
or whatever
Crisis
it is.
Meets Dread, that would be amazing.
That'd be such a show. Dread's like barely had anything either. I mean, like not for a long time. Like, and considering the big cyberpunk boom, like we've not had like a really good Dread game in ages. It feels like you could easily scan, if they did like a tie and you could get Carl Urban back, I'm sure he'd want to do it.
Well, the thing is, like, they've announced, haven't they, recently that Dread 2 is in the works or that there is interest in it. Like there is rumors circulating that it is going to happen. It's just a case of when now, which is such, it's music to my ears, that is.
Mm-hmm. I need to watch Dread again. That was like such an overlooked, because it came out right where the Raid came out.
Yeah, so
like
people just said that it was like, oh, it's too much of the same thing. And
it's like
real shame.
All set in one building movies. Next question from Golly Jolly, who says, would you rather go back to an era of unlockables or no DLC? Sorry, and no DLC, or stick with what we currently have? I do think DLC has the capability to enrich an already fantastic game, but it often feels like content is cut from the final build to save for future DLC.
Well, this is interesting because this is, again, another subtopic that Tom and I were talking about last night, and we were talking about how DLC has changed the mentality of video games, in that if it isn't in the launch game, then they can just partition off a bit of content and sell it back to you further down the line. Admittedly, there are more examples of good DLC than bad when it comes to the big expansions, so it's kind of like usually seen as a bit of a plus when it comes to the expansion set of things. But back in the day, we actually got like completely made fun of with the concept of expansion passes, because while you've got great ones like Diablo 2's expansion, expansion, we got some absolute stinkers in the form. Do you remember Gran Turismo Prologue?
Oh yeah.
What a load of steaming bollocks that was, mate. The fact that they were like, here is a glorified demo for 25 quid.
That was the ground zeros of its day.
Yeah,
the Metal Gear Solid 5
absolute
thing.
Stinker, mate. I cannot believe that they tried to do that. So I would prefer to live in the current day, because of the fact that at least I know the DLCs coming out are downloadable and optional and all that other stuff, rather than being bamboozled into buying these sort of low-par, low-effort bits that they've just scraped off the disc and then sold back to you.
That's another thing that goes into like what makes you feel old thing is like, yeah, sort of, it's a weird, I have like a, with Midnight Suns, like I look at the list of customization options for the Hunter, and you can customize every character as well. And I look at all of them, and in my mind, when I was looking at all those options, I was like, and I get to actually do this. Yeah, are you going to charge me for all of this? Oh my God. And it's like that weird thing of just like, you realize how far the industry's fallen, where like you expect monetization at every level. And like I said, some cosmetics are monetized, but that whole thing of like back in the day, like games that had tons of costumes to unlock, like Dead or Alive 2 or something on PS2, like that, now that would be monetized to hell. Dead or Alive 5 did do that.
I think it is, has like nearly £1,000 worth of DLC because of the, in every individual component's been broken down into a piece of DLC.
And so if you take any old game and just sort of like, if it was a plate and you smash it, it's like every little bit of it fractures out, and it's like, okay, we'll charge you for this level and this costume and this thing. Like I'm always curious what the reality of the dev side is. Like how much do they actually need to do that to recoup funds? Have production costs gone up so much that they need to have all these different monetization methods? Or can you just make a video game? Like even something like Evil West, which is like a direct throwback to like 2007 action games or something. I'm always curious how much needs to be in there. I just always assume that it's greed, because it feels like it. Yeah, like most of the time it feels like it.
It always feels like it. And speaking of greed, let's do our final question from Instagram, and potentially the final one of the podcast, because I'm pretty sure we have to dash off into the distance like
into
Wild West Cowboys. we'll do a quick one, actually. Just pick up Change Toe, aka Rich Hutchinson, just says, when can I guest? So you answer that while I find the other question. When can he guest, Scott?
He can guest in 2023. He can absolutely guest in 2023. In fact, he'll be able to shine a light into the window of game development now that he's working over at that studio I've forgotten the name of, Frontier?
Yes, it is Frontier.
Yeah.
And
shout
also,
out to Frontier.
The thing is that now I finally loaded up the question here. The Josh Utley's response on Instagram says, hope Scott feels better, which is nice.
Thank
isn't
you.
It?
Yes.
And he also says, you get the rights to remake any Lord of the Ring game. What's your pick?
Oh, the Third Age one. The turn based one that was
that was actually really good.
And even though that was out, and then one of my mates at the time, one of my friends now, like came over to the house just with it and was like, "Have you seen this?" And I didn't even know it was happening. And I still have that, one of those life memories where you just realize the perfect game exists. And we just played this like incredible, because obviously I'm a sucker for turn based combat anyway, but it's very Final Fantasy combat meets Lord of the Rings with incredible production value. And you even like later on, you unlock playing as all of like Sauron's creatures and everything. And you can do like a whole evil playthrough where you play through as like, you know, orcs and Uruk-hai and everything else.
So
I love, love, love that game. I would massively back that. In my mind, it animates beautifully and it would hold up very well. It just needs like a texture pack or
just
something.
Just needs a little tweaking. Maybe a little bit of tweaking,
but yeah, definitely Third Age.
That's a great shout. See, I would because I love my strategy games, I'd go for The Lord of the Rings, The Battle for Middle-earth 2 and remake that, because that game was phenomenal and it got
huge.
Nowhere near the love that it deserved, because it was basically just like you had your squad focus, you had your base building, you had all of that, but it was just set in the Lord of the Rings verse and it was just great. You could play as the good guys or the bad guys. It'd be fantastic. It was so good.
When I first moved out, when we went to university and I moved out with my friends, I said the game was huge because I meant the size of that game. Yeah. I had like multiple friends living in their different bedrooms, screaming to each other as they try to play together, like different setups and stuff. Just screaming, "Oh my God, Gollum's coming. You need to do this thing. You need to fix this or save this." So I have like the weirdest like adjacent memories of that, like walking between bedrooms and seeing how people were like fighting and stuff. But I've never actually played it myself. I feel like in the rise of like, you know, even like Halo Wars 2 doing well, it feels like that top-down approach to stuff, like, you know, should be way more on console. You could easily do a Lord of the Rings top-down battle for Middle-earth thing.
It was such a strange thing as well, because it came out, got great reviews, and then they just killed the franchise on it. It was like, okay then, fair enough. It was like them walking away, just going, "We've done exactly what we needed to do, and not a jot more, my friends."
Final question, and just we didn't do it. It's a very, very flame war-y one, this.
Oh, okay.
So this is from Shane/Blobby46, who says, "Not to start a war, but console players were for the longest time telling PC players that 60fps/144fps didn't matter, and now that they have access to it, it's now super important. Were console players wrong? Do they owe PC players an apology just to ruffle the old feathers?"
Right, okay, let's put this one to bed straight away. Yes, they do, but there is a caveat, because the thing is, now that we've got access to it and expect it in every games, we moan it when it's not in there. And we should apologize to PC gamers because of the fact that we were all like, "Oh, you're just trying to lord it over us." However, PC gamers did lord it over us equally. So they used it as a weapon as much as they did a shield against our attacks now. So I think that instead of an apology, there just needs to be a truce with both of us just going, "Fair enough. You were right. Let's move on.
Shake hands on the battlefield."
Exactly.
I feel like everyone who experiences 60 FPS or higher frame rates, especially if they're locked, like knows the feeling of like, "Oh, okay, this is actually just better."
Yep.
But I feel like the general conversation on the console side was like, just to put a disc in and just play the game. You don't want to get lost in all the sliders and all the different like tweaking options. I just want to play. And the idea of someone focusing so much on all that stuff was the thing that console players were annoyed about. It's just trying to prioritize the game experience.
It's funny, isn't it? Because all of those sliders and tweaks are now into most games as well.
Like, I know, I hate it.
Like, turn on performance mode. Do you want this on? Ugh. Do you want that on? Like, do you want to show these sort of things? And it's like, okay. So now we're basically all just globbing together into one big game.
I hate it. I want less options. I want to know exactly what the artist, tell me what the professional person who made it thinks is the best option. Yeah. I don't need, like in Sonic Frontiers, you can choose how fast you want your maximum speed to be.
When you told me that, I was just like, how, why?
Like jump height or something, or like acceleration speed. I'm like, you're the Sonic man. You decide. Like, I'm just going to max them all out. I don't know.
You can imagine one person over on like Sonic team just going like, "Listen, this decision is too big for one person. I'll give it to the players."
Let's democratize how fast Sonic moves.
Or maybe they were just laughing as they like did the evil finger temple, and it was like, "Yes, yes, let's see how what the audience thinks how fast Sonic should move. It will destroy them, the ultimate power."
To be fair, I don't see that much discourse of people debating the correct Sonic settings, but I imagine there's a Reddit thread out there somewhere.
Hey, remember, at the end of the day, there is no bad PR, only PR. Like, even if you are being raked over the coals and being the world is telling you they're terrible, people are still talking about your game, and
you're not wrong.
Get a few more sales out of it.
Especially for Sonic, they just announced a whole season pass thing, but they still haven't fixed the effing pop-in. So there's still always that. For now, though, this has been the Untitled Banter podcast, the UBP, the UBP,
the UBP.
Ivan Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me, and remember, you can check out both Instagram and Twitter next Thursday, where Scott and I will be putting out the tweet, the call to arms, for you guys to send over all your questions.
beautiful. Until then, thank you very much for sending all your questions, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.